When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Brian Reese.
Hello, Paul.
How are you today, Brian?
I'm doing fabulous.
It didn't sound like it was fabulous. You hesitated.
Fabulous is the word. Today's word is fabulous.
The password is
fabulous. So anytime we use fabulous throughout the podcast, everybody has to cheer.
Yeah, or a little duck will drop from the ceiling. There's an old reference for everyone.
I was just sticking with Pee Wee.
That's what she said? Okay.
It's never a bad time to bring Groucho Marx into something. So.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Okay, I'm thrown off a little bit. So, yeah.
Fabulous was the word we're looking for, Paul. Fabulous.
Fabulous. I'm not doing fabulous because I am so tired of single-digit weather and snow. I'm done. I would like it to go away now.
But it's refreshing.
No.
Nice, clean, crisp air. Wait a minute. You're in Denver.
I know. It should be nice now.
I'm in Chicago.
Exactly.
I don't want to hear about it.
No, you should be having the cold weather. I'm not used to this.
As all the folks in Minnesota just laugh at both of us.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, anytime you see on the news, you know, New York City has an inch of snow and the whole state has shut down. I realize that the city is not the state, but bear with me here. You know,
well, there's a lot of people from New York who would dispute that.
Right. But you know what? It's like, oh, New York got an inch of snow and, you know, the whole, everything has to shut down and nobody knows what to do. And I was like, you know, Minnesotans and, you know, North Dakotans and whatnot, they just have to find that silly.
I know. I once saw a weather report from Fargo that warned people not to go outside with exposed skin because of the cold temperatures.
Oh, yeah. We had that during the polar vortex this year.
Oh, why? Oh, why?
Well, awful. It was like we had negatives, wind chill negatives of like 40, 50 degrees. Literally, and I mean literally, 5 minutes and you were in danger.
Yeah, well, we haven't had that cold here. We've been in some negative numbers, but not that cold.
But you know what that also, what that led to was, so a lot of businesses were closed down. So people got an opportunity to stay home and read more comic books.
That is absolutely true. What a segue, because we're going to talk about comic books. But first, before we do that, I want to do something. Since we've launched this podcast, we've had a really great community start to build around us. Some wonderful feedback and several people and shows who have supported us and shared our episodes and what have you. And I have been I've been remiss in acknowledging that and reciprocating that. It's really bad form on my part. So I want to change that. So Brian, if you allow me a few minutes, I want to give a shout out to a couple of people.
Please do. And hey, let's make this a regular feature, but go ahead.
Yes. I was going to say that at the end. You read my mind. Well, first off, I want to thank Herman Lowe and Grant Richter of the just wonderful podcast, Into the Weird. They've mentioned us a couple of times, and they have been very supportive of us on Twitter and have shared our links and just generally been awesome. Their show, by the way, Into the Weird, it deals with the Marvel Bronze Age comics that are on the stranger side of things. Sometimes literally, because they mentioned Doctor Strange quite a bit.
Convenient.
But, yes, but it is a great show, and they're such wonderful hosts. It is really an honor to be mentioned by them. So please, everyone, if you don't already, go listen to Into the Weird. And while you're at it, also listen to Long Box of Darkness. That's another podcast that Herman Lowe does, which I love a lot. It deals with horror comics in depth and detail. And it's really broadened my knowledge of the genre immensely. Not to mention it's added to my reading list. It's just great stuff. Into the Weird, Long Box of Darkness. Listen to those two podcasts because they're great. And secondly,
they sound right up your alley too.
Well, yeah, they really are. And the second person I want to mention is Professor Allen of the Relatively Geeky Network. He's involved with several shows, Shortbox Showcase, Comics Reading Journal. My personal favorite is the Quarter Bin podcast. But pretty much anything Professor Allen is associated with is just pure gold. So seek him out. Fill your podcast queue with any and all things that his smooth, dulcet tones are attached to. He actually has one of the best voices in podcasting. It's nice to listen to. But Professor Allen has been right there since the very beginning, since the very first episode. He sent us feedback, and he's been supporting us ever since. And I'm truly, truly grateful for that. So that's it for today. I do want to do this as you had mentioned, I would do want to do this more often, make it a regular feature, and give back some love to the fantastic group of folks that I have been admiring for a long time and who have been good to us. So thank you, everyone, and more to come.
Thanks, folks.
Okay. On with the show.
And so.
So today, so there have been developments in the world of DC Comics publishing. Brian, you know a little bit more about this than I do. Can you?
Not by a lot, but I think one of the things that's caused a bit of kerfuffle out there in comment world is the fact that DC have basically stated that they're going to be cutting back on their line a little bit, and by that I think Didio said something like 5 to 10%. I could have the numbers a little bit wrong. Some of the nattering nabobs of negativity had it at, you know, the DC 22, and that's not remotely close to accurate. But they are paring down the number of titles they're publishing monthly. And like I said, I think the number I saw was somewhere between 5 and 10%, give or take a little bit around there, which in the end is not that many titles. And, you know, they certainly have that many titles that sell under already that sell under what would generally be considered a cancellation threshold as it is. So my initial generic take is, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that, you know, paring down, you know, getting rid of some of the dross, what it does is, first of all, it could help focus attention on the good stuff that's being published. Say, you know, Mr. Miracle. Would Mr. Miracle be able to sell more copies? Would Mr. Miracle have been able to sell more copies? Or Snagglepuss, if DC wasn't publishing, you know, 52, 56, 60 titles a month? Who knows? But
well, that was kind of the idea behind Rebirth in the first place, was to to have a small core group of comics that you would focus on and really put your great creative teams on those. And it worked, because Rebirth, when it launched, was fantastic.
Right.
But it seems like slowly, more and more and more titles have come up that are, well, they're not ones I'm buying.
And they're not. And you're not buying them. Nobody's buying them. They're not necessarily very good. you know, they're just...
It's all opinion and subjective, but...
Right. But so, you know, I think some of the statements coming out of DC have been along the lines of focusing on allowing like their roster of talent to tell the best stories rather than spreading things too thin. I'm curious, like with what they're currently publishing and what they've been promising, how that's going to work out. Because you have the possibly dead in the water Black Label, but you also have...
We hardly knew ye.
I think there is another title announced through Black Label, though, but I imagine it's not going to have Batwang in it.
Black Label, I'll be damned.
but you have Wonder Comics, you know, which is Brian Michael Bendis's little baby, and I think they're doing four titles right now.
Well, I think it's in his contract that Bendis gets all the toys.
Right. And eventually he probably will play with all the toys. But, you know, you have Vertigo. I don't know and I'm not sure if they count Vertigo as part of the
team. Yeah. I'm not sure. It seems to me as if Vertigo is its own entity now.
And it's, you know, Vertigo is, you know, basically, you know, on its last rites anymore. I mean, I think the attempt to relaunch it yet again and the attempt to bring in Gaiman-verse again has not necessarily worked out quite as well as they had hoped. I haven't seen them, but some of those titles, I mean, I'm trying to read them, but some of them just aren't great. And
they're fine. I've been reading all of them, actually, and they're fine. That's all I can say. Nothing's really standing out as being outstanding or, you know, just eagerly look forward to every month.
But I am curious where the cuts are going to come. Are we still going to have 7 Justice League titles? Are we still going to have 20 Batman titles?
A bit of an exaggeration there.
A bit.
Actually, maybe not with the Batman titles, because there's a bunch of Batman right now.
I mean, the prime Batman, obviously, is Batman and Detective.
Right.
And
but there's also the Batman who smiles, the Batman who frowns, the Batman who stumbles, the Batman who eats lunch for breakfast.
But a lot of those are minis, you know, and they're not ongoings. So I'm curious where the cuts come. I'm curious what that means going forward for introducing new titles or attempting new things and whether that will suffer or not. And part of me feels like it won't, because, I mean, we're going to have a Lois Lane ongoing and we're going to have a Jimmy Olsen ongoing.
Ah, welcome back to the 1950s.
I know, but I think, well, you know, they got Matt Fraction to write Jimmy Olsen.
It might be good. I mean, you know, back in the day, they had Kirby writing Jimmy Olsen, so why not?
It'd be neat if he, you know, wrote a couple issues of Sex Criminals. It'd be neat if he finished up Odyssey, but, you know, it's a...
Maybe Jimmy Olsen in Sex Criminals. That would be awesome.
I think that it seems like DC is committing to bringing in interesting writers, and writers who you never would have thought you would see writing for DC. I think some of that's the Bendis effect, obviously. These are all pals of his, but regardless of what one says about Bendis's writing, how they feel about it, he brings in good writers and he brings in really good artists.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the whole, remember the Marvel Architects? That was based around Bendis.
They're all, you know, sons and daughters of Bendis.
Right.
So I'm curious to see how that's going to go. And I think Marvel publishes too many comic books. And that's just not me. You know, I'm not a Marvel hater. I'm more a DC guy. But, you know, talk about overextending franchises. How many X titles are there?
Yeah, that's also being pared down right now too.
Yeah.
A lot of those X titles are coming to a, I mean, but that's a different story altogether. The X titles.
Marvel always brags about winning the market share and winning the dollars, and it's like, well, of course you do, because you publish twice as many comics, and that's actually not too far off from being accurate. That's not really an exaggeration. There are months in which they publish close to 100 different titles. That's crazy.
Is it really that much?
I think, yeah.
That, well, I mean, that seems like a lot, but there are things that I read a lot of Marvel because I like those characters, but I do see, like, this month, just last week, I think, Hulk Vereens was published, which is Hulk with Wolverine claws.
Yes.
I have not read it. It might be great. Might be fantastic, but no. I'm not going to read it.
And I think War of the Realms is going to have, like, I was just looking at the new Marvel previews the other day, and it was something like 19 spinoffs or 19 must-read titles for every issue of War of the Realms. That's just bananas.
Yes. And this is Marvel's huge. How do we go from DC to Marvel?
Well, because we're comparing, DC is paring back and possibly solidifying their line. I see it more of that than like cost cutting or whatever, because they pay their writers and artists more than Marvel. So cost cutting is kind of negligible. But
well, this is my issue with Marvel, even though, you know, I'm a Marvel guy. I like the Marvel. But for instance, they killed Wolverine. And yet he still continued to appear in comics in various forms, even when he was dead. And now he's back to life again, and he's everywhere. They are oversaturating every book with Wolverine again.
Again.
Yeah. And now they just got Conan, which is great. And they have two titles, which are pretty good. I'm enjoying them. But now Conan's going to be in everything.
And including Savage Avengers.
Oh, I was just going to mention Savage Avengers. I don't know how you feel about this, but can you think of a more...
cash grab?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Just Wolverine, Punisher, Venom, And Conan, I forget who the others are in there. I think Brother Voodoo might be in there. But come on. And
the fact that they haven't put Deadpool in it shocks me.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, just from a personal...
Although I bet there'll be a cameo.
Just a personal thing. It bothers me that the Punisher is an Avenger. You should... He's not a hero, everybody. Anyway, that's just me being an old man yelling at a cloud.
But yeah, I mean, I saw Savage Avengers and I was like, and this was short. This was, you know, I saw the announcement of this right around the time that DC was talking about pairing back. And I was like, see? Yeah. And, you know, less DC titles means, oh, well, you know, then I can pick up that, you know, comic that looks interesting from Image or Boom or IDW or wherever else.
I just don't know. So, but which way?
I'm just looking forward to, you know, Daredevil destroys the Savage, or Daredevil. Yes, that would be interesting. Deadpool destroys the Savage Avengers, you know, miniseries.
Featuring Wolverine, young man Wolverine, old man Wolverine, middle-aged Wolverine.
And Gwenpool.
And Gwenverine. And Benverine. And that's amazing. Little song and dance there.
They've always said they're not going to bring Uncle Ben back. If you're going to bring him back as Benverine.
Uncle Benverine.
And he has claws, but he also dances a lot. Yes.
He sings you a nice tune as he's
a, tears he's a you tap to pieces. Dancing, tap dancing, claw wielding.
He has adamantium tap shoes. The strongest tap shoes ever invented.
Speaking of trademarks, we need to work on that. You heard it here first, folks. So.
Oh, man. So, you know, to finish this off, it's really, I'm kind of torn on the whole thing because I like a lot of titles just because, you know, every once in a while you're going to find that gem that you really love. Like Immortal Hulk, I still think is one of the best comics being published. I didn't think that was going to be a great comic when I heard it announced, but it's fantastic.
Many people, believe me, say that that is a great title.
Yeah. So, you know, the more titles you have out there, the more opportunity you have for a little hidden gem to sneak out. But at the same time,
quickly get canceled.
Yeah, well, there's, but at the same time, culling out the dead weight could lead to some, you know, higher quality. I don't know. I don't know which is the best.
I think to me, it's like, I'd be cautious about panic. And that's what people seem, some folks seem to do, like with the announcement that DC is cutting back on titles. It was like making bold predictions about the fall of DC. And I was like, you know, they're owned by Time Warner.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere. There was some talk of, you know, the same kind of talk of Disney's going to cancel the Marvel Comics line. It's like, no, they're not. No, they're not.
I mean, at some point, comics may go away. Or they may move to different platforms. The floppy could... What?
Digital-only platform is right. Could happen.
The floppy platform may go away at some point. You know, the digital exists. The collected editions may still exist.
Well, we know this podcast will always exist. Yeah, I mean, I personally don't think that the actual physical comic will ever go away. Maybe the amount that it's published will go down in the same way that vinyl records are still being made, but not to the extent that they once were.
Right. But yes, no, it's when vinyl records were the only way to listen to music, then yes, obviously they are produced in less quantity now than they were then.
But then CDs came out, oh, the vinyl's going to go the way of the dodo. No.
And it did for a while for all intents and purposes. But
wow.
I mean, it stuck around. Punk bands were always releasing 7-inches, thank goodness.
Yeah, and every DJ needed a vinyl record. Wiki, yeah. Wiki, wiki.
But I think calling the death knell of comics as we know it, just because a publisher is not going to publish 10,000 titles a year, seems a tad a chicken little.
Yeah, it's a bit extreme.
Deep breath, you know, see where things lead. Yeah, and see
it's going to be fine.
Yeah, see what new stories, you know, are awaiting us. And, you know, as ever, hope for the best. I mean, you know, it's comics are best when Marvel and DC both do well.
Absolutely. We'll all, you know, I think we should just see how this develops and where it goes and not try to jump to any conclusions. So anyway, I believe we've petered out on this particular conversation. So
let's take a quick break.
And we'll be back with Justice League International. Yeah, I didn't tell it. Did I mention that at the top of the?
You didn't, but that's okay. People can wait for.
Yeah, maybe I'll edit. Maybe I'll edit this out.
You can insert it later.
We're going to be reading Justice League International, everybody. Back in a couple of minutes with that.
Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, a new monthly show chronicling the adventures of the JLI era by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. We'll be going issue by issue in release order, tackling the core Justice League title, Justice League Europe, and the quarterly book. Along the way, we'll take time out for special episodes covering various spin-offs, cartoon appearances, the infamous TV pilot, and much more. So join me in an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we celebrate your favorite JLI members, such as
Martian Manhunter,
Batman,
Dr. Fate,
Black Canary,
Fire,
Ice,
Maxwell Lord,
Oberon,
Captain Marvel,
Rocket Red,
Captain Atom,
Mr. Miracle,
Guy Gardner,
Booster Gold,
Blue Beetle,
Nort, and many, many more. Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Want to make something of it?
And we're back. Now, today on the program will be Brian's recommendation. So, Brian, take it away.
All right. Let me prepare my Michael Cohen-esque notes and let's read our prepared statement. Justice League International was a series launched by DC in 1987 and featured the creative team of Keith Giffen, J.M. DeMatteis, and Kevin McGuire. Its publication history is a tad complicated, beginning life as Justice League, then Justice League International, which is the classic period, and was renamed again as simply Justice League America. The pairing of the disparate scribing of Giffen and DeMatteis was initially suspect to the proverbial powers that be. But it proved to be fortuitous, with each writer bringing a very unique take on how a super team should be presented. That choice proved to be golden, with a series that many folks look back fondly to as one of the great runs in the Justice League franchise. This is further exemplified by the great art of Kevin McGuire, a relative unknown at the time, whose seminal work is made most profound by his individualistic style and the perfection of facial expression that few have matched. The series had some fits and starts, with crossovers clogging up some of the narrative early on, but the creative team set the bar from the get-go with a mix of humor and serious storytelling on display. We had the infamous one-punch sequence and the introduction of Bwahaha, leavened with cosmic themes and extensive character development, some of which were at odds with the current presentation in other books at the time. The stories we are looking at today, which is issues 1 through 13, feature the forming of the team, with DC editorial blocking many of the big names, and the coalescing of the character of the plots and personnel, setting for a very unique take on the nature of a super team. With Maxwell Lord pulling strings and machinations behind the scenes, we join our erstwhile mostly D-list heroes, Batman, Guy Gardner, Mr. Miracle, Martian Manhunter, Black Canary, Blue Beetle, Booster Gold, and others, as they quip and battle their way through the DC universe.
Hooray!
So, Captain Marvel as well. Forgot to include him in my prepared statement.
Well, Shazam!
Holy moly! Or Captain Whitebread.
So this is one of the finest runs in comic books that I've ever read. I love this.
I think it was hard when I was selecting what to read. It ended up being two collections, both of which I think are out of print. Following the publication history of this is a nightmare because of the various renamings that they did. And there's an omnibus out now that has the entire run, but individual collections are spotty.
I'm pretty sure the different volumes are still available. Justice League International Volume 1 is available on Amazon.
And that's issues 1 through 7.
1 through 7. And then, yeah, so there are still the trades available at least on Amazon. But how would you like to attack this?
Well, I think, to start off with, I'm not sure. So to address the elephant in the room, we'll get to that later. So I wanted to start with the beginning, even though I think really the recommendation that I would see online when I was trying to narrow down what I recommended was people were just saying, just read the whole thing. There's not one story arc that stands out as more classic than the others because of how great the entire run was. So
yeah. There's credence to that.
Yeah. So I just started at the beginning, which is why then we get, you know, the Millennium crossovers and the Suicide crossovers. But,
you can pick the, it doesn't hurt the story, but every once in a while there's a gap.
Right.
You know,
it kind of the issues where, and this has been my problem with crossovers since crossovers have existed. And it, I think they really stymie the writer. You have a writer who's, or in this case, two writers who are really building something, and everything comes screeching to a halt. So, like, one of these issues doesn't even feature most of the, you know, one of the Millennium crossover issues doesn't even feature most of the team.
Right. They're except in kind of little cutaways.
Right. They're back to doing Superman and, you know, and all of that. It's just like, come on. You know, I want to read a J.M. DeMatteis and Keith Giffen story that they're telling independent of whatever mega event is going on out there.
Absolutely. So, well, that says, you know, that goes on to this very day. A run starts to get going really well, and then they have to stop to, you know, to do something else. And then when it comes back, inevitably, it's out of steam.
Right.
It takes a while to get back up to steam. Well,
right. Or you forget where you were.
Exactly. I would like, you're right. I would prefer if a run was just a run.
And this is not a new issue. Like you said, this goes way back. I mean, not as long as I've been making comics, but obviously not as long as I've been making comics, but
yeah,
certainly, you know, Infinite Crisis, or Crisis on Infinite Earths was one of those, but we even had stuff, we had crossovers before that too, both from Marvel and DC. So I guess I'm throwing that out as a caveat before we even talk about the stories or the writing, because I kind of wanted to get that out of the way, that out of 13 issues that we read, I think 10 are essential and 3 are not throwaway because things do happen in them.
Yeah, and they're still fun.
Right.
You know, they're not as fun. I mean, I could sit and I could read an entire comic book run of Mr. Miracle and Blue Beetle just talking to each other.
Yes.
That I would read that every month. But, you know,
coming soon from Tom King.
Tom King and Brian Michael Bendis on Guys Talking.
There'll just be nine panel grids of just faces.
Yeah, with every once in a while, someone will nod and say, mm-hmm. Which is unfair. There's good writing there. Anyway.
with art by Greg Land, and, you know, it forces him to not, you know, he's... trying to picture Greg Land having to, like, draw 9-grid panels of dudes' faces. I don't know where he would find his reference material for that.
Copy paste. Okay, we're off on a tangent.
Right. But to the story itself. So, you know, I recommended this. So, Paul, first of all, I guess now that we got that out of the way, my primary complaint, Paul, what did you do? So I recommended this, but what did you think of the stories that we read?
Well, I, you know, as I said, this is just a wonderful little book. I enjoy this immensely. So that's it, everybody. Good night.
Thanks for stopping by.
No, but the thing that makes this stand out and to make it so unique is the way that each character is written. Everyone has their own personality. Guy Gardner has two personalities. But they're very distinct. They're very unique. You know, not to keep harping on Bendis, but his, you know, group titles is they're all pretty much just Brian Michael Bendis and his voice talking to each other. Right. These are all unique, and everyone has a multifaceted character, and the way that they play off one another is just so much fun to read.
Yeah,
I've read several pages over again just to say, well, that was enjoyable. I want to do it again.
Well, I think, like, to me, one of the reasons for that is it's DeMatteis versus Giffen. And by versus, I don't mean conflict. I mean, there are not, well, certainly there are two more different writers out there. You could find that. But their styles and their thematic interests are so vastly different.
But they play well together because...
And it's just, you put them together. And again, I could see why people were like, how in the world is this going to work? And it worked brilliantly. Those two found a rhythm bringing each of their styles together. I mean, Giffen did the plotting for the most part, and DeMatteis did the actual scripting, at least in most of the comics that are in this first run that we're covering. But you can hear Giffen's voice. And by that I don't mean like we were saying with Bendis, where it's Bendis, but you can hear Giffen's sensibilities coming through in a lot of the dialogue.
Oh, and absolutely, yeah.
I think it's just amazing how well Giffen and DeMatteis worked together to create this. And I think it took both of them to make it what it is.
Yeah, and you can feel the tension between the two. They mm-hmm. they mesh really well together.
Yeah.
But in the same way that some of the characters aren't really getting along with one another, you can see the two writing styles kind of clashing together. Right. But it always resolves with a joke or a one-liner, and it's brilliant.
And it works.
Yes.
And, you know, it's, again, the humor really comes from Giffen, I think. You know, it's, if either Giffen or DeMatteis are listening to this, which I assume they are, I'm sure they can write in and correct us on this. please do. We'd love to hear from either of them or both.
Or even someone just pretending to be them. That'd be fine, too.
Yeah. It's like DeMatteis, you know, a lot of his stuff or the stuff that I really like by him. We almost did Moonshadow for this, but I thought I've done a lot of heavy stuff lately, so I thought I'd go with Justice JLI. But
that's a completely different story.
Right. Yeah. And it's like thematically, you know, it deals with a lot of very serious and cosmic issues. And I think, with DeMatteis, you have a lot of metaphysical sort of ideas. I don't want to say religious specifically. I don't know his religion or if he has it, and it's none of my business. But, you see a lot of sort of deeper explorations in DeMatteis' stuff, a lot of his stuff. I don't want to pigeonhole either of them. Whereas Giffen, he writes the grand, adventure with humor type stories mm-hmm. in a lot of his work.
Well, yeah, I mean, so we're going to focus a lot, I think, in this discussion on the humor and the camaraderie between the different characters. But the ideas that are being expressed here, there's a lot of really deep themes.
Yes, and we should definitely not, one of the mistakes a lot of folks make is that it's just the bwahaha stuff.
Well, that's kind of what stands out. That's the, that's the lovely gloss that's over top of everything else.
Right. It's your entry point.
Right.
Of course it's great. But the Gray Man.
Exactly. And that's really dark if you want to talk about the Gray Man arc.
So the Gray Man arc is this character who had existed at a time eons previously, who had challenged the Lords of Chaos for supremacy or what have you, and he lost. And so his punishment, if it would be considered an actual punishment, was that he had to, trying to think how to properly, some of it's a little fuzzy, he had to absorb...
There's a little gray area?
Right. He had to absorb the dreams of humanity, and it was almost a storage for them. Am I getting that right? Is that how you read it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but the consequence of that was that he had, there was no color in his life. Not right. Like literally no color, but also no joy mm-hmm. in his life.
Yeah.
And that kind of took a toll.
And so he rebelled.
So he rebelled and created his own kind of hellish dreamscape for himself.
Whilst using, the dreams of the living, like in the small town in Vermont. And it's pretty serious, you're dealing with, Dr. Fate is kind of the primary on this. And Dr. Fate kind of comes and goes in the team anyway.
Fate kind of comes and goes.
Yeah, Fate does kind of come and go.
Yeah. I will admit that I am not well-versed in the history of Dr. Fate. But I mean, but you could, and I guess that's what I was, the point I wanted to make was that you don't really need to know the history of these characters because they give you enough that it makes sense in the context of the story that they're telling.
Yes.
And it's not just Dr. Fate, it's kind of all the characters. Like, you don't really need to know the background of Mr. Miracle. You can pick it up bits and pieces throughout.
And they do give it to you bits and pieces. It's, you know, it takes a while, but eventually, like, if you didn't know he was a new god, by the end of those first 13 issues, you have found that out.
Yeah. Yeah, he seemed kind of like a goofy guy in the beginning, but as you get to know him and as his character develops, you realize, you get some of his backstory and you realize there's a lot more to this guy than just, you know, big collar and a quip here and there. But like I said, there's lots of darker aspects of it. I'm going to blank on the aliens that come to try to denuclearize the world.
Sorry, I got you. It's a Silver Sorceress, Wajinda, and Blue Jay.
Yes, and Blue Jay.
And Blue Jay.
But they seem like, and you say, oh, Blue Jay, Wajinda, they seem kind of silly. But if you look, their backstory is really dark. Their entire right. world was destroyed, and they're just here. They seem like villains, but they're actually here to help everyone. And, I mean, that's a really fine line. I mean, do you force people to be good?
And they don't answer the question, exactly. Ultimately. The threat, you know, they end up, nukes and Russia are like a theme throughout all these issues. It seems like
it. Well, it was kind of a thing in the 80s.
Mid-80s, yeah. There's even a great scene where Ronald Reagan can't remember if he's met Superman before.
Yes.
And this is before we knew.
Well, he always had the reputation of being a bit doddering.
But yeah, I mean, so these characters come from another planet. And they come in and they're going to stop our world from using nukes. They're going to get rid of all the nuclear weapons. And of course, they run into problems in Russia because like a nuclear reactor starts to melt down. And one of the characters then sacrifices their life, or we think he's not dead specifically, but you know, he's as good as dead. But you know, he sacrifices his life to stop the nuclear meltdown. And then of course they're taken captive by the Russians, quite possibly to return at some later date.
But that idea of, do you allow people, do you allow people free will to come to their own fate? Or if you have the superpower, do you just, you know, force people to do things for their own good? No, it's a complicated question, and it's one that's not easily answered, but it's one that comes up quite a bit if someone's a superhero.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that they address this head on and they don't give you an answer.
And there's even the differing opinion amongst the team itself. So, which
and you know, goes from complete extremes, like Guy Gardner, who just would.
He's the epitome of like the 80s. You know, he's always quoting Rambo and Rocky, and you know, running in like, you know, he's the gung ho. He's the gung ho.
He's a big meathead.
He's portrayed as a big meathead in this. But he is like the walking, talking, breathing action 1980s action movie come, well, not to life. It's comic books. He's not real.
What? What are you saying?
I know. But sort of come to life in the pages, shall we say.
Yeah.
And I think DeMatteis and Giffen clearly are having a great deal of fun and some sly commentary.
Yeah. Well, they really turn, you know, because Guy Gardner's an annoying character to begin with, but they kind of turn him up to 11, making him just so annoying and so awful. And then at the same time, they take Captain Marvel, Shazam,
right,
and they crank his childlike aspect up.
So almost
they play off each other.
Yeah, and almost, but almost too much, but it's never too much.
No.
And they do it with all of the characterizations. It's, you know, Batman is, the characterization of Batman in this, I think, is fascinating. Because, yeah, Batman's a dick. We all know that. but he's kind of extra dick.
Yeah. Well, I love the contrast between him and Guy Gardner, mm-hmm. because Batman is just as arrogant, just as bossy, just as much of a jerk.
Right.
Guy Gardner is, but there's something, but because he's Batman, he's inherently more likable or less abrasive, I guess, but he's still just as awful and just as right. bad.
And he's been built up in mythology, you know, to Batman's always right. Batman always wins. Right. And, yeah. you know, the other characters see this as you're saying, and they reference the fact that Batman is as insufferable as Guy Gardner. At one time, I think Martian Manhunter refers to Batman as immature.
Right.
And yeah. I mean, that was great because that is a characterization of Batman that you don't really hear.
Well, yeah.
Immature. You know, he's the world's greatest detective. He's the serious one. And there's a great line in the last issue that hopefully we will get to that I thought of you immediately upon reading. But, you know, he's the Dark Knight. He's the serious one. He's the one that knows all the right answers and what needs to be done and keeps everybody together. And he's like the daddy in the group, yeah. sometimes literally.
Well, I love the fact that, you know, he constantly says that, I work alone. And yet you're with everybody.
He never works alone.
I know. You seem to have a lot of Robins around you. And in this book, people call Batman out on that. You know, you're not working alone. You're working with a team, especially Black Canary.
Right. Which is also a weird characterization because she would have a closer relationship with Batman than anybody else on that team, except maybe Martian Manhunter.
True. You know, granted, this is the 80s, so mm-hmm. So gender roles are a bit, they're not
stereotypical.
Stereotypical. There you go. That's the word I'm looking for. But they do try to break free of that a bit because she's always, you know, every time someone says, hey, fellas. And at the end, and she starts to take control of the team.
Right.
You know, over Batman.
And there's that great scene there. There's a scene where she rescues Batman. And yes. Batman has the thought bubble saying, she's rescuing me?
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
What's the characterization? Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we got to keep coming back to just the camaraderie between the group. I love the way they interact with one another. These are basically people that should not be working together.
Right. And again, we have to address the fact that these are most of them are D-listers, or at the time they were D-listers.
Oh, yeah.
Because... The DeMatteis and Giffen were not allowed to use Superman because this was coming out of Crisis on Infinite Earths. And so like John Byrne was doing Superman. I think Perez was doing Wonder Woman. So they got thrown a bone by getting Batman. But I think for a while there that Batman was potentially even off the table as well, in which case you'd just have Justice League Detroit again.
Which, can we just stop for a moment and say there was such a thing as Justice League Detroit?
But I think that
they took what they had and they exceeded expectations, obviously,
by far, because they were, again, it's like they were able to really go into characterization on these individuals in a way that they would not have been allowed to do with the big names, because nobody cared how they wrote Blue Beetle. Nobody cared how they wrote Captain Marvel. Nobody cared how they wrote a Booster Gold. You know,
yeah. Most people would say, who's Mr. Miracle?
Right. You know, nobody in editorial, they weren't paying attention at first, I don't think. I mean, who was it? It was Andy Helfer at first, and I think it was Denny O'Neill and Andy Helfer, I think, were the editors at various points. But even then, those are two editors that generally, I think, had a softer hand when it came to creative. But nobody in like the main offices was really paying attention because, you know, they'd kind of written off Justice League.
Which is so crazy.
Yeah.
You know, because you think about what Justice League is now. And it's just, you know, to think that this was sort of pushed aside and not really thought highly of.
And by the time folks started to notice, like, you know, the higher-ups started to notice, the book was a hit. And so, you know, why mess with, well, this is comic book publishing. They're always going to try to mess with success.
Exactly.
This is DC.
Yeah. Well, if this was Marvel, I said, let's publish 6 more Justice League titles.
Right.
And split that team.
Well, and DC to their credit, DC did.
Yeah.
you have sort of the great, this is where you saw like Ted Kord and Booster Gold becoming Ted Kord and Booster Gold. Two of the great besties in comics history.
Oh, yeah.
And that the Bwah Ha 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 Ha, the first appearance of that was, I think in issue 7, when Booster Gold was hitting on a woman and got rejected. And she turned out to be like the French liaison to the Justice League International. And, of course, Ted Kord just cannot control himself with laughter and mirth.
And it's wonderful. It keeps coming back, it's just really well done.
And I think we have to, so obviously I referenced this in the intro and, of course it has to be mentioned that this run features one of the most iconic panels in all of comics history. And that is One Punch.
One Punch.
And if nothing else had happened, we would always, if nothing else happened with the series, we would always have One Punch. But for anyone out there who doesn't know what One Punch is, it is the panel when Guy Gardner has irritated Batman to his last nerve. And so Guy Gardner pulls off his ring and threatens to fight Batman. And then you have the infamous panel, which just shows Batman's fist in Guy Gardner's face with the, bonk. And Guy Gardner goes down and is unconscious for hours, I think maybe even days.
Yes. And then you have Blue Beetle just repeating the phrase, One Punch.
And Black Canary being like talking about how it comes in after it happens. And you have thought balloons of her several times talking about how depressed she is that she wasn't there to witness it.
Okay. This is something that I find, maybe it's just me, but I found it fascinating that Guy Gardner is an absolutely wretched character. He's awful.
Mm-hmm.
He eventually gets bumped in the head. He has a bump on the head. And
not from Batman.
No, because he was trying to find his ring and he bumped his head.
And he grabbed a green mouse instead. Freaked out and banged his head.
And he has a complete personality change where he's just sort of a lovable guy, innocent, and gosh golly, isn't he a nice guy? And I found that so much more annoying when I was reading this. I was like, can't we just get back to the old Guy Gardner?
The first scene of him afterwards that, like, where he has any dialogue, he's sitting there singing You Light Up My Life by Debbie Boone. And I think he follows that up with Close to You, by the Carpenters.
I honestly thought that was just, it was him pretending.
Right.
That he was just putting on a show because Batman had clocked him. But no, it's a real thing. Anyway, I just found it amazing that, at least for me, I got to the point where, can we please go back to the awful Guy Gardner, because I can't take this anymore.
But that's part of why it's so great, is because you didn't think he could possibly be more annoying, right? Which you just said. And then they made him more annoying. And it works.
Yeah.
I like more annoying Guy Gardner. Because again, it's how it plays amongst in various scenarios. We haven't really talked a lot about the plots in these issues. And I don't know how they're important, but I was about to say, I don't know how important they are. Well, of course they're important. And a lot of really interesting things happen in these comics.
Yes, well, as is typical for this time of comics, there's a lot of different stories being woven in and out.
And not all of them resolve.
Exactly. Because this was truly ongoing, serialized storytelling, where they would set up a plot line that wouldn't be paid off for months down the line.
Right. We had that mysterious computer that was controlling Maxwell Lord. And that went on for,
13 issues.
13 issues.
Yeah. At least 12.
Yeah. 12, I think, was it did resolve itself before the Suicide Squad crossover, which was issue 13. But, that's a really interesting, Maxwell Lord finds a computer in a cave.
As you do.
As one does.
Well,
Here's and then the computer is controlling him throughout all this, leading. So Maxwell Lord, obviously, is, we'll get a little plot in here. Maxwell Lord is partly responsible for moving the Justice League, which is kind of disgraced and not well thought of at the beginning of the series. And he's responsible for some tricky machinations behind the scenes to improve their status amongst world leaders. And we find out that a lot of this is being driven by this mysterious computer that he found in a cave.
Yes. Yeah. So he's kind of setting up situations and scenarios where the Justice League can prove themselves in order to enhance their respectability.
And a lot of that is the crux of this first kind of overall arc.
It's overarching.
Slightly redundant.
Yes. Yeah, but there's something about the Maxwell Lord story. They try to give him this redemptive arc, and even they kind of make it so that he was being manipulated.
Right.
But let's understand something. He found that computer because he killed a guy.
Yes, or he was trying to kill the guy. He decided not to kill the guy, but then the guy fell by himself anyway and died by accident. But yes, he was intending.
But guess what? You still killed that guy.
Yeah.
I know. But his backstory is, again, really kind of dark. And boy. There is really no redemption for him.
No. And as we know, following Maxwell Lord's story, lo these many years since, he's not a good guy.
No.
But so some of the plot is, like, so that's kind of the overarching plot. There's other little battles. You have, you know, Bialya, the sort of Middle Eastern, fake Middle Eastern country that the Justice League has to contend with, and their kind of wacky dictator colonel guy. There's a lot of Russia. They seem to end up in Russia every other episode for different reasons.
Well, they have the Red Rocket,
right?
On, you know, who becomes a member of the team in order to add a little international spice to it. Who, you know, and that's basically Russia Iron Man.
Although it's a whole troop of Russian Iron Men's,
the Iron Legion.
But then they also at some point have to fight the Royal Flush Gang, which is up there with the Fisherman.
Yeah, exactly.
In my estimation of villains.
Yes.
Every Royal time Flush
Gang. They're a bunch of cards.
I think they're aces.
But they end up getting jacked.
But I've never, you know, they're one of those, whenever I see them show up, I was like, oh, is the writer out of ideas? But I don't think Giffen and DeMatteis were out of ideas using them. I think they had about respect for the Royal Flush Gang as I do.
I think they brought them in specifically because they're so ridiculous. And they actually seem to make them a credible threat, at least for a few minutes.
I guess one of the things, you know, so we're kind of covering a little bit of the generic plotting. And in some ways, like I said, like the plot is important, but it's all of it mixed together. And I think we would be remiss by not speaking of the one person who really pulls it all together, and that's Kevin McGuire.
Oh, absolutely.
Whose art is astonishing. And
you mentioned in the intro about his expressions. It's outstanding. The back and forth conversations, you know, we keep talking about the camaraderie and how the characters all interact with each other. It wouldn't play as well without those expressions, without the looks that they give each other.
Absolutely not. Half of the jokes or more would not land.
Yes. It really is brilliant. Just the sideways glances, the wink here and there, you know, a half smile. It's outstanding. That's the word that keeps coming to my mind.
And it's such a large cast, and every character is unique and has a unique face and unique facial expressions. Very few artists can do that well.
Absolutely. And
I think he can even draw feet.
You know, and the body language, and it's amazing. The way that Captain Marvel is drawn, even though he's this big, burly guy, he still has the posture of a child.
And the facial expressions of a child.
Or at least a young, a tween, however old Billy Batson is at this time.
We know he doesn't have his driver's license yet.
Yes, and the way that Guy Gardner's, he's just vile in some of his facial expressions. He's just the kind of guy that you want to one punch all the time.
And I think only Kevin McGuire could get away with a smirking, smiley Batman.
Yeah.
Like in that day and age, at least, earlier on, of course, Batman was very jovial and, come on, Robin, let's get out our big giant bat and, boxing gloves and whatever. But even Batman's mouth, McGuire animates and makes alive and different and interesting.
Exactly. He has a little, scowl on his face, in his lips. It can be played differently. It can be played for humor, or it can be played as he's angry. It's really quite amazing how well that's done. And all the expressions and all the way that they're presented are unique to that character.
Yeah.
Are unique to it's not just done for that panel to make a joke. It's what that character would do.
Right. And it matches, they match the personality so well. There's no generic. It's like you said with how Giffen and DeMatteis wrote the characters to be so unique onto themselves and not just sound like each other. McGuire follows that up with showing us, Giffen and DeMatteis tell us and then McGuire shows us.
Yeah. It is truly this entire team is playing to their strengths. And really, we're really working well together. All those little individual pieces are great, but the way that they all fit together in this, mosaic of wonderfulness.
And like you said, they're playing, they're also playing a long game. I tend to agree with the folks who say, read the whole damn thing. Don't just read 13 issues. You could buy the omnibus. I don't love omnibuses.
Omnibussy.
that was my favorite Bond villain. But I have a hard time with those just because they're unwieldy. We haven't even talked about all of the one-liners.
Well, there's so many one-liners. I mean, just we could just grab Blue Beetle.
Justice League Assemble.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I loved that. I thought we needed a catchphrase. We don't.
And probably my favorite, which is the one I thought for you in particular, was Black Canary and Batman talking at the end. And Black Canary says, "Why so grim? I'm always grim." True, but you're really out-grimming yourself today.
That's right.
And just that poking fun. I mean, DeMatteis has given poke fun at so many of sort of the DC sort of sacred cows at that time.
Exactly. There's even, at one point, Batman makes a joke, and they all sort of are kind of looking at each other going, was that a joke? Did he joke? Batman doesn't joke.
And Black Canary's like, well, he did make one 4 or 5 years ago, so he's probably due for one now.
That's right.
Again, it's, all these one-liners, but what it does ultimately, all of these things as we talk about this, is that it humanizes them.
Oh, yeah.
And it humanizes them in a way that a lot of comics just were not doing at the time. Marvel was doing it, but that was Marvel shtick. And you had some writers and some darker corners of DC doing that. But, those were the grim and gritty corners, whereas this is the bright and shiny corner. And this is this comic is very bright and shiny.
Yeah.
Well, like you said, there are the dark moments, but,
But that's more just themes, underlying themes that the
yeah,
that the characters kind of are intermingling with. Yeah, but DC had that tendency because their characters are so grand and they're so mythological that they seem to be aloof and they're larger than life. And it's easy to forget that these are human beings in these goofy costumes. And that's what makes this just so wonderful, because these are just people trying to do their job.
Yeah, but they're people dealing with big themes and like in a big way and in an exciting way and in, I almost want to say, joy. There's joy in reading these comics.
Right, exactly.
I love you know, Batman Year One or whatever, but those are not, that's not joyful. Watchmen is not joyful, you know, Swamp Thing, not joyful.
Well, I'll give you an example, like going on right now is the most recent run of Captain America by Ta-Nehisi Coates. It's very good, and I am enjoying it, but at the same time, it's not a fun comic. There's a lot of desperation going on in it. I would like some more joy.
there's only so much heaviness you can take, and I see that with like some Batman. I like Tom King's writing, but you know, both Batman and Detective seem to be focusing a lot on how much of all of Batman's failures and all of the things that are wrong with Batman. And these are important things to discuss. But at some point, I think I've said this before, I'll probably say it again, but I miss just Batman the Detective.
Right.
You know, and I get that we want to expose, you know, heroes' foibles. And at some point, you know, that's not the only reason we read comics, you know, just for the, because they're now serious and important and, you know, are lifelike and whatever. Yeah, we read them for that, but we also read them because Justice League International exists.
Exactly.
And, you know, not every day do I finish reading an issue of comics, of a comic book, and realize that I'm smiling.
It's fun. And comics should be fun. There's a place for introspective characterization. There's a place for deep, dark themes.
Yes. But we can do two things. We can do more than one thing at a time, even at a time.
Yeah. It's almost as if people comics. Are multifaceted individuals that can absorb different things all at once. I wonder if, this is just speculation, but I wonder if in the rush to make the Bill Maher's of the world, or, you know, to prove them wrong.
Right.
We try to make our comics so dark and gritty and so meaningful that it's to the detriment of the story and to the meaning.
I think you're absolutely, I think you're absolutely right. Because we were so defensive for so long about reading comics, not we, you and I, but you know, like
we
fans
as the comic book, you know.
Right. And we still are to a point because, like you said, the Bill Maher's of the world and others, you know, still just view it as, you know, comics are just read by men who are stunted emotionally or, you know, maturity wise.
Yeah, we're man children living in our mom's basement.
Right. And some comic fandom has been that and probably always will be. That's always going to exist. And that's fine. Those people aren't hurting anybody unless they're incels or something.
Or they're, you know, downvoting something on Rotten Tomatoes before the movie comes out.
Yeah. But yeah, I think you're right. And we've been so used to being so defensive. And so anytime a mature or more literary comic came out, we would rush to embrace it and we would hold those up as sort of the standard.
Yeah.
Where we should be holding up Justice League International right next to it.
Exactly. Because it's a whole spectrum. But there's something great about just the inherent goofiness of the medium itself.
Yeah.
And the things that it can do. You know, I think we should embrace that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I still read DuckTales, you know, whatever. It's like,
yeah, because it's fun.
Because it's fun.
I need a palate cleanser every now and again.
Exactly. And I feel like Justice League, to get back to the comic at hand, I mean, I really feel like Justice League International, the entire run, I think that Giffen, DeMatteis, and McGuire created something pretty special. And I know a lot of folks agree with us. And I know that there's like, you know, I pick something that's relatively easy. Someone out there is going to be like, well, you know, actually, Justice League International isn't always, you know, but screw those people.
Yeah.
I think for the most part, I picked an easy topic today, and I feel good about that because I think that generally this series has quite a bit of goodwill extended towards it.
Oh, yeah.
I think that it never hurts if you remember really enjoying it and haven't read it in a while. Go back and reread it, you know, and treat yourself, you know.
Oh, yes, it is just It is just a glorious read. It's so much fun. You know,
and there's lots of action.
It's just one of those classics that needs to be read by every comic fan.
Lots of punching and flying, you know, it's not just jokes, not just one-liners. It's not just, you know, there's lots of comic book action and big spectacle and giant monsters and evil doers as well. It's got it all.
Yes. Absolutely. I don't think we can have greater praise for this run than we do. Because it's just great.
Read it, reread it, reread it again.
And then when you're done, read it over again. So what else we got?
We've already gone probably overtime at this point. I bet we could go on for quite a bit more, but maybe we should cut it off here and let people make their own decisions and own thematic ideas from reading this.
I agree.
So, Paul, we did my recommendation this week, and I believe it's time for you to announce your recommendation for the next thrilling episode of the Collected Edition. What do you got for us, Paul?
My next recommendation is going to start off our Captain Marvel month.
Ooh, a Captain Marvel month?
A Captain Marvel month in honor of the two Captain Marvels that will be gracing our fine movie screens. Coming up very soon.
You don't want to get a lawsuit there.
Oh, we can. We're far too small for people to say less. But I'm going to start off by recommending Captain Marvel, the Carol Danvers version of Captain Marvel, specifically the 2014 run by Kelly Sue DeConnick and David Lopez.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, it's 15 issues. That's the entire run. Unfortunately, that one was cut short because of Civil War II, which turned out really well. Anyway, this run is actually really quite good. It's not, you know, this version of Carol Danvers, only came around in 2012, I believe. So, I mean, as we're seeing her now and how she's going to appear in the movie and so forth.
Right. Well, I'm also excited to get to a Kelly Sue DeConnick series as well. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yes. And it's, you know, this one kind of drops you right in the middle. You know, she's already established, and you, if you don't know what her power set is, you just kind of wing it, but it's really quite good. It's Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Yeah.
Come on. How can you go wrong? But this is actually broken up into three different volumes, but we're going to be reading the collected edition of all 15. Yes. It's a 2014 Kelly Sue DeConnick, 1-15, because you know what, Brian? They relaunched with a number one.
Of course they did.
Yeah. That was after they had already relaunched with a number one and right before they relaunched with a number one. But anyway, Kelly Sue DeConnick.
So glad they do that. Anyway, that's another cut. Well, I think that's a conversation we've had. So excellent. We're going to read Kelly Sue DeConnick's take on Captain Marvel.
Yes. And it's a lot of fun. And
speaking of Captain Marvel month, I wonder what possibly we could be covering after that.
Well,
I guess you have to wait to find out.
Yep. No spoilers.
No spoilers.
All right. So I think that's it for this particular episode. Brian, thank you again for recommending JLI. That was just so much fun to go back and read again. You know, I hope we did it justice. No pun intended. That was unintentional. But I'm a big booster of that comic. I think it's gold.
And on that note.
It's super, man. Come on, we can keep going if you like.
We could.
I think it's a miracle that it was published. Nothing?
You really think these are marvelous, don't you?
See? It's so easy to do.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. As always, we value your feedback. Hit us up on Twitter at CollectedEDPod. That's Collected Ed Pod. Or visit our website, CollectedEditionPodcast.com, where you can leave a comment on an individual episode. Or send us an email to comments@CollectedEditionPodcast.com. Anything's great. Here's something. If you go to iTunes and leave us a review, I'll be your best friend.
Wow, that's quite an offer. Do you get a plaque for that, or like a certificate?
Just my undying admiration.
I kind of like the bribery aspect, but
okay. Well, in time, If we start making money, I can start bribing people. I guess until next time, everybody, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at collectededpod, that's collected, E-D-P-O-D. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Oh, and I got to tell you.
Okay.
My little beagle over here, who usually sits on the couch in the office with me.
Okay.
Will occasionally just get up and shake her, you know, just shake. Yeah. And her collar goes ding, 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 ding. And I can't tell you just how many hours I have spent editing out that little noise and trying to make it, you know, just trying to make it nice and clean.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to another podcast, an academic podcast, and I could hear ding, 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 ding in the background. And he just goes, settle down. So anyway, wait, you're allowed to just leave that in? Ah.